Radio. Hello.
And good morning, everybody. One more time, 9:03 a.m. in the greater Vancouver area. You are on 96.1 FM. It's Radio Vera, and today is Wednesday, as usual. Well, almost every Wednesday or every other Wednesday, we have a company of our friends from JFSA, Jewish Family Service Agency, a fantastic organization celebrating its 75th anniversary this year. And you know, I am very happy to say hello to my colleague and friend Sid Goldberg. Hello, good morning, Sid.
Good morning. We're going to be a regular weekly feature, it seems.
That's right. That's right. I think the original plan was to do it every other week, but we are going on a very, very intense schedule down the road, and it's the holiday season, isn't it?
It is. And of course, the good thing about that is we have some wonderful different reasons to be here as far as guests and information. And thanks to you, the people who are listening, and the feedback, especially what we had last week, it's very positive.
I was before the break, I was doing the intro of our hour in Russian, and I mentioned that today's program is a little bit unusual, because fortunately or unfortunately, usually during the JFSA hour, we touch upon issues and problems that affects people in the area, in the community, or outside of the community. And today, in this regard, it will be a little bit different, because it will be a show about celebration and light and memory and good deeds, I suppose.
It will. And volunteering and miracles and stories, and actually I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be very interesting. Roki Bernstein is indeed a very interesting person, speaking with her a little bit in the what we call waiting room. And of course, I have a friendship with her already. She's a fellow Winnipegger, and we grew up in the same neighborhood.
But I guess before we give the word to Roki and ask her to talk a little bit about herself, let us just say welcome one more time to our listeners, to our guests, and maybe even to some of the co-hosts.
Good morning, everyone. You are on Radio Vera 96.1 FM, and this is the JFSA Hour.
And indeed, we are back. A wonderful guest today, and it should be an enlightening morning, from what I understand. Rabbi Roki Bernstein is a Magid. Now, for those who are not familiar, that is Judaism's tradition of someone who is a sacred storyteller. By the way, she is also ordained in this area. She is a scholar. She's a woman rabbi, and we've already had some comments, I understand, off air about that, who is active in the area of interfaith relations. Rabbi Bernstein will be discussing volunteerism, random acts of kindness, giving of ourselves, creating mitzvahs of lasting value. And by the way, she spoke last night at Beth Israel Synagogue. And we'll talk a little bit about the theme, but you were mentioning, you asked the people there a couple of very specific questions.
I did.
Indeed, and maybe you could quickly repeat them on the air.
Yes, I asked the people present if any of them would like to volunteer a memory of a moment when they were really participating in a miracle. And what was that miracle, and how did it feel for them?
Indeed. And then there was a second question.
And the second question was to, since this is the season of generosity and acts of what I call give and take, then I asked some of the people in the audience to consider a gift that they had been given that went really beyond the value of the gift itself and really became a treasure in their lives and really fed their soul in a way that an ordinary gift couldn't. So we were looking at all of those possibilities.
Indeed. I know you're checking out a call there, Ivan. So while you're doing that, I'm going to mention that your topic yesterday is, if not now, when? And while we're adding, maybe you see if this caller is going to join us or not, let me ask you a very important question based on the questions you asked yesterday. What does Judaism consider a miracle? For example, were Hanukkah and Purim, and are they both indeed miracles?
Absolutely. Absolutely, they're miracles. Because in both of those holidays, something happened that was not possible to happen at the beginning, and only under extraordinary circumstances, something else stepping in, something else causing a whole shift in everything that was going on, only then does the miracle take place. But the greatest of miracles is not what takes place, is in fact that there is a miracle to be given by something much greater than us to us.
And an example of that, a Jewish example, whether using the Talmud or any other source,
we could go right to Hanukkah itself, because the whole holiday of Hanukkah celebrates the fact that Yehuda Maccabee, representing the tribe of Maccabees, decided to go up against a very formidable army, the Greeks, with very, very little strength himself in his whole army, but personally he had the ability to believe in God and to believe that the miracle was in fact possible, and the miracle actually occurred, but that's only the first of them.
Rocky, I sense so much passion in your voice. When you just came here, you just started talking, and I think there'll be a lot to talk about, but when you were being introduced by Sid, you were referred to quite correctly. I actually even looked up the translations as the storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
So
Magid,
that is correct. This storytelling. So, where does it come from? How did you come to this? Is it something that resonated within your heart? Is it something? Is it started with the stories that were told to you?
Absolutely. Storytelling started for me walking to the synagogue when I was 3 years old, because my grandfather was part of the founding families of the synagogue, and we would go every weekend for Shabbat for the various services, because he considered it himself, you know, both an honor and a duty to make sure that there was a minyan. I lived at my grandfather's house. I was 3 years old. I needed, in quotes, entertaining. So my grandfather would take my little hand, and we would walk across the bridge, and we would go to the Sherazedek Synagogue in Winnipeg, and we would go into the chapel, and these wonderful, wonderful, remember, we're talking 64 years ago, 63 years ago, these wonderful older Jewish gentlemen would just adopt me. They would call me their little Shekhinah. I had no idea what that meant at the time, and they would pinch my cheek, and they would just, you know, sometimes reach in their pocket and have a little sweet for me, and they would just sit me down, and they would sing actually to me sometimes, you know, the prayers and the blessings. So for me, growing up in a synagogue was just a very natural kind of thing, and more importantly, those walks across the bridge came with stories. Often the story that was going to be told from the Parsha of the week, and it was, I won't say watered down, but it was made to be able to fit into a three-year-old's words. And so I came away from those years spent with my grandfather having this really great treasure chest of wonderful stories and folk tales and mystical tales and little explanations that would suit a young woman of what my faith had for me and in store for me.
And that was here in Canada?
Here in Canada, in Winnipeg.
In Winnipeg. And I actually, Sid mentioned that you traveled a lot, and considering that the vast majority of our audience right now is Russian-speaking, I heard some references made about you visiting, was it Russia or Soviet Union still?
I did visit Russia. I was invited to attend a trade show from another part of my life and be an international judge, which was really astoundingly wonderful. It was in Moscow, and so I was a guest of the various people, and I was asked twice, so two summers in a row. The first summer I went to Moscow and explored the little villages and towns outside, and then we took the train to St. Petersburg, so we were there for quite a while, and I have to tell you, I loved going to Russia.
And why was that?
Well, in the oddest of ways that I would never have expected, the moment really that I stepped out of the airport, and I was tired, onto the streets, It was like I was home. It was like every face I saw was a face that I had seen before. The way that people walked, the way that people ate, the way people talked to each other. It was like walking into very much of the Winnipeg that I grew up with.
Oh, wow.
Which was many Eastern European and Russian immigrants. My family, myself, 3 out of 4 of my grandparents came from Russia. Two of them came in the late 1800s. So they came without a lot of what I would have called that 20th century baggage of war and very serious pogroms. They came into a much easier life in that late times. But then they had the responsibility of bringing all the rest of the people over.
That's correct.
You know?
Yeah.
And then my later grandparents, my grandfather served in the Russian War and got his papers, which enabled him to immigrate to Canada in the early 1900s. So my second family came. Second part of my family. And I have to tell you, every single one of them is a storyteller.
Well, I was just about to say, I just keep listening to you, and I said, okay, yes, I have a true storyteller sitting in front of me, and I am happy for our audience as well that they're lucky to have you today. Дорогие друзья, итак, у нас сегодня в гостях Роки Бернснин. Сейчас мы с ней говорили немножечко о ее прошлом, о том, как она еще 3-летней девочкой слушала истории, можно сказать, раскрытым ртом в синагоге от своих родственников, от друзей, от дедушки, и как это запечатлелось в ее памяти, и как это в итоге провело ее на путь, который она выбрала сейчас. Она раввин, она магид, это рассказчик, перевод с иврита, я даже посмотрел, это человек, который, опять-таки, рассказывает, оратор, рассказывает другим людям об особенности веры, об истории народа, об истории веры. Итак, такой человек у нас сегодня в гостях. Well, I think that after this introduction, we need to take a little bit of a breather, and you mentioned Hanukkah as one of the examples of miracles, and we talked about also a little bit of your background, and you mentioned, of course, Winnipeg. I think Winnipeg is prototypical Canadian city, if you please.
Yeah.
So I think a very fitting musical beginning to our program will be also performed by a Canadian band.
Oh, Hanukkah, oh, Hanukkah, the light, the menorah. Let's have a party, we'll all dance the whore. Gather around the table, we'll give you a treat. Sit for the nymphs to play with, and lots of to eat. And while we are playing, the candles are burning low. One for each night, they shed a sweet light to remind us of days long ago. One for each night, they shed a sweet light to remind us of days long ago. Oh, Hanukkah, come light the menorah. Let's have a party, we'll all dance a hora. Gather round the table, we'll give you a treat. Trip over nymphs to play with and latkes to eat. And while we are playing, the candles are burning low. One for each night, they shed a sweet light to remind us of days long ago. Oh, Hanukkah, come light the menorah. Let's have a party, we'll all dance a hora. Gather round the table, we'll give you a treat. Trip over nymphs to play with, and latkes to eat. And while we are playing, the candles are burning low. One for each night, they shed a sweet light to remind us of days long ago. One for each night, they shed a sweet light to remind us of days long ago. One for each night, they shed a sweet light to remind us of days long ago.
This is the JFSA Hour with Sid Goldberg and Ivan Zubov on Radio Vera 96.1 FM.
And indeed we are back. Good to hear the bare naked ladies in the background. I understand they did get dressed for the specific occasion of singing the Hanukkah song. If you should sing yourself while being nude, I imagine, and lighting the candles, that could be kind of interesting to say the least. We have Rabbi Roki Bernstein here, who is a Magid. She is also an ordained rabbi who works with interfaith relations. Very interesting lady. Great storytellers, we're finding out. And it's always nice to have a fellow North End Winnipegger, because we both grew up with the stories and the community that was so warm and so beautiful. Now, your discussion last night, your theme was, if not now, when? Maybe one of the most respected, brilliant minds of Judaism, a sage among sages. When we look at someone who is special, be Rabbi Hillel, certainly. If there was anybody in Judaism that people recognize, whether they're Jewish or not, possibly for a saying that he is quoted for, which is, if not now, when? In fact, his actual words were, if I am not for myself, who will be? If I am not for myself, who then for am I for, or why am I here? And if not now, when? Now, we're going to talk a little about volunteerism. So let me ask you, using the theme you used, how does that evolve into volunteerism?
If I'm not for myself, who am I? If I'm not for others, what am I? If not now, when? I think that Rabbi Hillel was trying to reach into the very core of our heart centers and ask ourselves, what was it that we could most be and do and serve in this life that would also connect us to the greater life of God? And I think his answer to that question was that we need to look at this in three parts. We need to look at the fact that we need to be there for ourselves. The greatest gift we can actually give ourselves is to live the life that we have really, really well. And at the same time, we are not alone on this planet. We are surrounded by not only our own personal Judaic tribe, but tribes of all kinds and colors and feelings and ideals. And we have, he said, a responsibility, if not for others, then what am I? Then I am alone on the planet and I am not part of the planet. And if I'm going to consider that I need to both stand up for myself and stand up for my friends and neighbors and all people and all consciousness perhaps, then when does this actually kick into place? Do I wait for tomorrow? Do I wait till I feel better? Do I wait till someone phones me? No, he says. If not now, when? So what he really means is that in every glorious moment of the great gift that we have called life, we have the opportunity to give God back a gift and say thank you by our very doings, which brings us to volunteerism.
Indeed it does. Now, he also was famous for another situation where he spoke with another person. Some people say it was before a king. Other people say it was an indigenous person who just happened to talk to him. And the question, very simply, in so many words, was, can you stand on one foot and explain Judaism? And he actually went back to Leviticus, and following the statement there, that is, what is abhorrent or hateful to you, don't do to others. Do you believe, based on both those statements, that that is also stating to people that you have to study, you have to understand, because he goes on to say, that's the whole truth of Torah, now you better go on and study it.
You know, that whole idea of standing on one foot to explain the Torah, and he says, you know, do not do unto others as you would not have them do unto you. He puts it in the negative. Do not do unto others as you would not have them do unto you. Well, really, that is in actual fact the entire mandate of our very being, is to find ways to be kind to each other, to serve each other. After all, kin, kind, kindness all go together. But it reminds me, if I could just take a quarter second, to add in the words of Golda Meir, the prime minister who in in the late 80s, 70s, 80s, you know, was very distressed about the world and was asked what was going on between the Jews and the Palestinians. And she said, oh, no, that's the wrong question. Ask me, you know, a bigger question. Okay, Madam Mayor, ask me if there will ever be peace in this world. And she said, you know, there will be no peace as long as we hate our enemies more than we love our children. Do not do unto others as you would not have them do unto you. And it was just Netanyahu, I do believe, said that the greatest distress for him in all of this was not only the killing of the people in Israel by the bombs, it was the fact that the Israelis themselves were forced through the fire that happened by accident to have other children killed on their watch. So I think that that saying is a very deep saying. Do not do unto others. Stop right there and think, what am I doing here? If not now, when? When am I going to stop and look at this if I don't do it right now?
Now, let's say I am someone who's never volunteered. Maybe I come from a community or a background or a culture where looking at volunteering has not been the most positive thing to do. Or maybe in the culture I was in, the people in charge had their own version of volunteering, for one thing. How do you now encourage that person who's never volunteered in their life, has always looked at it as, whoa, you know, come back later, don't call us, we'll call you, and now motivate them to get involved?
Well, you know, I saw a very interesting thing happen myself, because I saw a young man one day trying to cross the street and he was blind. And then I saw two younger men come along and they just looked at this blind man and passed by and walked by, and then they turned around and saw the blind man with real seeing, and each of them went back and took one of the arms of the blind man and helped him across the street. That is the beginning of volunteering. That is the beginning of stepping outside yourself to see someone else needs your help. And from that moment, if you give yourself just but one first chance, anything's possible once your heart is open.
Rocky, I think it will be a good point to stop a little bit here and give a summary and give a little bit of a translation. I must say I'm not a scholar, but I will try my best to sum it up very, very briefly. Итак, дорогие друзья, напоминаем, что у нас в гостях раввин Роки Бернстин, и в этом сегменте она рассказывала о том, что означает выражение «если не сейчас, то когда». Эти выражения исходят, опять-таки, к иудейской традиции, к религии, но, в принципе, они актуальны и сейчас. И то, как вел беседу мой коллега Сид Голдберг, он, в принципе, задавал вопрос о том, как деятельность Роки, как раввина, связана с тем, что с другим аспектом их деятельности, а именно волонтерской работой. И, в общем-то, на этом и было все основано. И здесь у нас были и цитаты, и обсуждения очень простых фраз, что «если не сейчас, то когда», а это лишь часть большой фразы, что «если не сейчас, то когда», и «если я не на других, то тогда кто я?» В этой фразе, наверное, и заключается вся суть того, о чем мы будем сегодня вести разговор, а именно о волонтерстве и о помощи. Ну и мы уже начинаем говорить о том, как же сделать первые эти шаги, и раввин Роки сказала, что нужно просто найти какой-то момент в себе. Он может начаться с абсолютной мелочи, помочь кому-то перейти дорогу. Но как только этот первый барьер будет преодолен, то эта самая дорога, этот самый зеленый свет будет вам открыт. Ну а пока передохнем и отвлечемся на музыкальную паузу.
I'll tell a tale, 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 tale. Yeah. Of Maccabees in Israel, L, L, L. Yeah. When the Greeks tried to assail, sail, sail, sail. Yeah. But it was all to no avail, veil, veil, veil. Yeah, yeah. The war went on and on and on until the mighty Greeks were gone. Yeah.
I put my lockers in the air sometimes, staying there. Spin the dreidel. Just wanna celebrate for all the nights. Singing ale, light the candles. We say I'll have me in Hoya for all eight nights. Then we play dreidel by the candlelight.
chill, chill. Yeah, yeah, the war went on and on and on until the mighty Greeks were gone. Yeah,
I've been my lockers in the air sometimes, saying ayo, spin the dreidel. Just wanna celebrate for all late nights, singing ayo, light the candles. We say ma oh.
Listen to JFSA Hour every second Wednesday on Radio Beera 96.1 FM in the morning between 9 and 10 o'clock.
And we are back right now at about 9:30 in the morning, and it was like 5 degrees when I got up this morning, which was a pleasure. I had a walk in zero the other day with Helen. Now, you had the opportunity to speak at Sharizetic Synagogue just a few weeks ago. We should qualify Sharizetic Winnipeg, which is actually Sharizetic the way it's spelled, not Sharizetic here, for Rabbi Green. And, of course, I go back to the time, even though I was a Rosh Binnan person, to Rabbi Milton Aaron, of course, Reverend Burkle. But you had a chance to speak there not long ago, and you were speaking on a specific subject and giving the Devar Torah, which for our listeners is basically taking a part of the Bible, what we refer to as a Torah, some people call the First Testament, and actually discussing it, explaining it from a religious interpretation or a current interpretation, or for that matter, a whole different one. Let's talk a little bit about that. And she just gave me the CD out there.
Well, that was, you know, the Parsha of that week was the binding of Isaac. And the binding of Isaac is very difficult to explain because, you know, traditionally we look at it as Abraham being called to take his beloved son up the mountain and sacrifice him to God. And my grandsons were in the audience, 5 and 7 years old, and I did not feel this was a story appropriate to them, nor was it the one that I wanted them to carry forward. Because I truly believe that that's not quite the story is all about. The story is more about taking Isaac up Mount Moriah, up the sacred mountain, in order to consecrate Isaac as the next carrier of the tale, to put upon him the mantle of initiation, that he was going to be the next person to carry this idea of one God back to the people. And so his father brought him up the mountain for God's blessing, not for, you know, God to take his life, but in very fact for God to bless his life as the next person. And then there's this wonderful little story that goes with that, that then comes, you know, through the Talmud, which is a beautiful little folktale called The Ram Whose Horns Reached to Heaven. And this is about the ram that actually did get sacrificed on Mount Moriah, who suddenly and miraculously appeared, of course. Now, we knew all the time, and this is the real key to that story, we knew all the time that Isaac was not meant to be sacrificed, because at the beginning of the story, it says, Abraham says to the people, oh, don't worry, we will be back. Not I will be back, I'm leaving Isaac up there. No, no, no. It says we will be back. So we have an idea that something different, something magical, something miraculous is about to happen. And happen it does. Because not only do they go up the mountain and find that, of course, it's not a, you know, Isaac to be sacrificed, but Isaac to be the offering of majesty, in fact, that he would carry the next cloak of authority. But we find that this magical ram appears to be the sacrifice instead. And then we find in this wonderful little story that's in a Howard Schwartz compendium, The Ram Whose Horns Reached to Heaven, that that very ram was one of the things created before creation, like the rainbow. I mean, believe it or not, things created before creation. And here's this ram who spent all this time in paradise in heaven waiting for God to say, now is the moment. And then there it was on Mount Moriah, now is the moment. And a sacred angel took the lamb, the ram, and put it down in the bush. And there it was just waiting for Abraham and Isaac to discover. They hadn't seen it 5 minutes before as they walked up the mountain. So the ram was sacrificed and the ram went back to paradise. Isaac went on with his life, and we know Abraham's story. But we don't know is the story of the ram. Now, the story of the ram is quite incredible, because that ram went back to paradise and had a very wonderful paradisiacal life, except that he was very unhappy as a ram, even as a special and sacred ram. And he said to God, you know, God, I'm unhappy. I have to go back to earth. I have to go back there. Well, God said, why would you want to do that? You've served of the greatest service. You've been a great sacrifice, a great sacred doing in the world. I think that you've done just fine, and you are entitled to just be happy. Oh, but God, oh, great Hashem, I am so not happy. He said, you know, I gave of my various parts, and my tendons became part of King David's harp, and my wool became part of Joseph's coat of many colors. All of the parts of my body have been used in such a sacred way, but you know, oh, great Hashem, I still have my soul. And if I don't do something with my soul, then I really haven't been on the earth and given everything of myself. Oh, please, great God, could I please go back? Well, if you must, okay then. And in, of course, the snap of a few little angelic fingers, the ram was whisked down by the angel back down to earth, only this time. The ram, this beautiful ram, had horns that reached all the way to heaven. So this ram could be a very great service on the planet Earth, because he was not only connected by his very hoofs and his heartbeat to the planet Earth, but through his horns that reached all the way to heaven, he was connected to Hashem, to God, to paradise, to the angels, to all of the teachings of the Torah that went on in paradise. This was one very happy ram, because he got to serve in both ways. He did many wonderful things. One night. The ram was walking through his usual territory, which was the planet, and he saw an old man crying, and he said, old man, why are you crying? And the old man said, oh, I've lost my little tobacco box, my little box with the tobacco in it. You know, I only have one. It's my dearest possession. I need it for the yeshiva. You know, we all have one. I'm just lost. I'm so unhappy. And the ram said, oh, never mind. I can fix that. And he just bent down, and the ram just bent down, and the man took a little piece of horn and carved a wonderful little snuff box. And the next day he went to the yeshiva, opened it up, and well, you can imagine, the very smell of paradise from the ram's horns was right in that little box. Every other little man in the yeshiva came up quietly and said, do you think I could get one of those? Do you think I could get one of those? Of course, he said, you just have to go and see my friend the ram. So the next thing you know, there's quite a lineup at my friend the ram, and the ram goes, of course, and he bows down. Of course, and he bows down again. And of course for you as well. And he bows down, and he bows down, and he bows down. And people take little pieces of his horn till one day, quite in the future, suddenly there are no horns left. His horns have reached past the sky, down past the clouds, down past the mountains, down past the very bushes, until you can hardly tell him from any other ram. And you know, until this day, we are not sure what happened to that ram, but it is said that we will not see the ram again until it is time for the Mashiach to appear.
Indeed. Now, there is a very, very interesting story that I know people enjoyed immensely.
Will this time come? What do you think?
I do believe that the time will come in the traditional sense of the story, but I believe the whole point of that story is that that ram was a Messiah. He was a messenger. And what did he do? The very thing he wanted to do. He gave little parts of his soul, which were contained in his horns, because his horns had him and God in it together. His horns contained the whole mystery. And he gave of himself. He volunteered his very soul in order to serve anybody who asked, without question, without judgment. So I believe that both he will come as the Mashiach, but also that little pieces of the Mashiach are already floating right round our lives.
Which brings me to a very important subject, but do we have to go for a break or anything before I ask for this important question?
I will let you ask this question.
Okay, here we go.
This one time, Sid.
In fact, know, you're talking about acts of kindness, and it's interesting because I always go back to Avraham when I look at that, who, you know, through dreams he heard that people may have studied Torah and may not have, but even if you have not, the way Abraham got his information from God was always in dreams. And along came these three people to his house, and the first real official act of kindness we got to see, which is when he said to Sarah, go make some food, and we will wash their feet. And he did not ask any of his servants to wash the feet. He personally did it, which is the first time you see someone of that kind of power offering not only a service, but offering it of themselves.
And that really becomes the key to it all. Shall we continue?
Of course.
And that really becomes the key to it all, because as we see just even in the little story of the ram, what have we actually got to give but our very selves, our lives? Everything else that we have is really a rearrangement of the reality that came with the planet. It's not ours. But what's ours is the greatest of gifts that we got. Tick-tock, our heartbeats, our lives, our very moments on planet Earth, given to us as a gift by God. This is what we have to give. This is the sacrifice, the sacred doing, the moment by which we take something that we can never replace, and we freely and willingly, from the love of our heart, as a random act of kindness, meaning nothing intended to be gained, we put that out freely. That is volunteering at the deepest of levels. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be formal. It doesn't have to go on forever. It is the very moment when we volunteer a moment of our lives that could be just ours, and we are willing, like the ram, to bend down in humility to all of the rest of God's children and say, may I help you? How may I serve you? What can I do to be of service in your life? And in fact, who am I speaking for? Because I'm a little leaf on the tree of God. So therefore, I also, like the ram, have this divine connection, my little light of my soul that lives in me. And if I can offer that out, if I can volunteer it to someone else, especially when they haven't asked and aren't considering it, then I have done the greatest deed that I can possibly do.
Ну что ж, дорогие друзья, вот как переводить после такой замечательной истории рассказанной? Ведь важна не только своя история, но и то, как она рассказана. А рассказывала нам сейчас раввин Роки Бернстин интересную аллегорию о том самом барашки, рога которого упирались в небеса, да не простом, а тот, который был принесен в жертву Авраамом вместо его сына Исаака. И смысл этой истории, которую я вам советую переслушать еще раз, благо такая возможность существует, в том, что этот барашек, снова попав в рай, попросился снова на землю, потому что у него, сказав Богу, что я не все еще отдал, у меня еще есть душа. И его душа, его огромные рога, которые упирались в небеса и которые люди разобрали на табакерке, это, в общем-то, и показатель того, к чему, о чем мы сегодня говорим, опять-таки о том, что самое важное, пожалуй, в нашей жизни – это умение давать другим. И именно в этом, наверное, заключается наша сущность как человека, поскольку наше время, кусочек нашей души, наше сердце – это именно то, что принадлежит нам. Это не то, что мы позаимствовали других, это не то, что мы взяли из окружающего мира, это не то, что мы взяли от Бога, а вот то, что есть у нас самих – это время, наше время, это наша душа, это тот дар, который мы получили и с которым мы должны поделиться. Ну и, наверное, чтобы это сделать, и чтобы это сделали все, потребовалось небольшое чудо. О чудесах мы и будем говорить чуть попозже. Ну а пока песня под таким названием в исполнении Maccabees.
Candles on my vehicle, eight nights, gonna shine invincible, no longer be divisible, born through the struggle, keep on moving through all this hustle, head up, head down, through all of the bustle, New York City, wanna flex your muscle, look so down, look so puzzled, huddle around your fire through all the rubble,
bound to stumble and fall, but my strength comes not from man at all, bound to stumble and fall, but my strength comes not from man at all.
Until tomorrow, wipe away your tears and your sorrow, sunrise in the sky. Like an arrow, no need to worry, no need to cry. Light up your mind, no longer be blind. Him who searches will find. Leave your problems behind. You will shine like a fire in the sky. What's the reason we're alive? Reason we're alive.
Bound to stumble and fall, but my strength comes not from man at all. Bound to stumble and fall, but my strength comes not from man at all. You know how to be, and this is the light of festivity, when your broken heart yearns to be free.
Listening to Radio Vera 96.1 FM. We continue our program dedicated to JFSA's 75 years of community service.
And we are back with Rabbi Roki Bernstein, Magid, which is a sacred storyteller. She is ordained in that area. She's also an ordained rabbi who works in areas of interfaith relations. You cannot get a better storyteller. Very interesting, especially the story about the ram. But one of the important things, and I'll go back to Torah, because it is certainly, at least for the Jewish community, whether we are greatly religious or cultural, we seem to always want the songs, the history, and the culture that comes from it. I mean, we're people of the book, no doubt about it. Thing we often hear within it, be it Abraham, be it Isaac, especially Isaac, are random acts of kindness. The study of how to be a part of it, to do the right thing, to treat people in a certain way, which I think is the attainable goal in there the more you read it. Define for me what you believe the Torah's version and values of a random act of kindness, and perhaps your own.
Well, random acts of kindness. You know, that little phrase has become quite a catchphrase over the last 20 or 30 years. And what's important in that word is the word random. Acts of kindness, if we think long and hard about them, they will come to us. But to be able to pause, center, and shift in that New York moment and be with exactly what's in front of you and do a random, meaning you didn't think of it before, you hadn't planned, it just came to you in that moment. Now the question is, did it come to you, or did the act of kindness come calling? Because it said that we live in this field of all possibilities where things are called together. So perhaps your need to do a random act of kindness and someone's need to be there to provide you with that opportunity go together. So a random act of kindness actually takes two people. It takes the giver and it takes the receiver to make. The random acts of kindness that I believe that the Torah was asking us to do were acts of kindness that came from our heart. There's a wonderful book by Yitzhak Buchsbaum called Jewish Spiritual Practices. And one of the practices that he has, and they're wonderful Hasidic practices that really anybody can do many of them, one of the practices is to simply, before you eat in the morning, do a random act of kindness, something that you had not meant to do. Answer that email that you didn't mean to. Phone your aunt that you've been meaning to get a phone call to. Take your wife coffee, even if it's something you've never done before. You know, just one little thing. It doesn't have to be a big thing, but it has to be something that is not in your normal routine. Brush your teeth twice if you normally brush them once, because that's an act of kindness to your teeth. What this says is that if, and it comes from the Hasidic practices, if you do this first thing in the morning, you have revisioned your contract with Hashem. You have initiated a dance between you and the divine, and you have begun to open your heart. When you open your heart to do kindness, it is very hard for hatred, animosity to step in. You know, Woody Allen said, you've got to be a little bit cracked to let in the light. And the light is what our souls are made of.
Now, I mentioned to you off the air a fact that, you know, most of us will never be aligned with the song Tzadik HaDamar as far as being one of the stars of it, because you have to be a very special person to attain to where these people that we sing about in shul get to. And you mentioned something interesting a few minutes ago off air, and that is your comment that you can actually get there.
Yes, you can. And I can tell you just from my own little personal experience. I was in Bulgaria, in Sofia, in the early 70s, and it was not a very wonderful place to be because communism was very aggressive in that city and it was very difficult. And we were leaving at 6 o'clock in the morning, so we were at the train station at 4 in the morning, and I was very, very hungry and very, very cold. And there was a little old man, and he had what you and I would call a popcorn or hot dog stand, you know, with just a little gas light. And I went over there to get one of these, I modernly call them a hot dog, perhaps a sausage in a bun, something. And it was ice cold. Ice cold. And here's this little old man. He's also ice cold. But I've just reverted into some kind of inner child monster. And I take this hot dog and I take it back. And I say, no, I don't want it. I want a hot one. Not possible. Blah, blah. So I say, fine, I want my money back. No, this isn't possible either. And this little old man, he didn't get frustrated. He just stood there. I got frustrated. I got angry. I got mad. I, as they would say, lost my cool. And I took this hot dog and I just flung it back at him. I did. I am ashamed to admit, I did. Muttering words of God knows what. And he just stood there. And I got on the train. And we went to the train to Sofia, and then we continued to Rome. And we were sitting in Rome a few days later when, you know, the light hits. And I went, oh, my God, what have I done? I will never, ever, ever be able to rid myself of the wounding that I have caused this man. Oh, my God, Roki. Now, I want you to know that I carried that, and carried that almost as a daily basis, how ashamed I was of my behavior for a good 25 years, at least. And one day, I was here in Vancouver, and I was at the corner of Pender and Chinatown, and there was a little old man sitting on the street, and he, I don't know why, he just reminded me of my little old, what I called him, the Bulgarian hot dog man. So I went up to this man, and I said, hello. I said, can I help you? And he didn't speak much English, little cap. And so I took some money, and I took two kinds of money, took two $5 bills, and I gave him one, and I said, you know, I would like you to take a friend to lunch. So I would like to give you this because I would like to take a friend, and also I know you don't have many opportunities to be kind and generous, so let me give you this opportunity as well to pass it forward and to create some flow. And since that moment, I have looked at every single person with their hand out for whatever reason, whether they want their time or my money, from that Nachmanides statement, the question is not, where is God? The question is, where is God not? So who has their hand out? And who is asking? And who is the real giver? Is it me who's going to give a few coins? Or is it that man who's taken this part on the play and is sitting there asking so humbly for me to help? Because he gives me the opportunity to be kind and generous. Without him, my works of random act of kindness would have no place to go.
Indeed they wouldn't. And of course, we only have a few minutes left. We have about six maximum, and we probably have to get one more ID in. But I do want to talk about creating mitzvahs of lasting value, because that is so important. First of all, because JFSA is celebrating its 75th anniversary, I know all the things we do. I am going to put in a plug and say, if you've been thinking of leaving any kind of legacy or doing something special, it'll last a lifetime, helping people with housing or poverty issues, or for that matter, illness issues or other areas where we in the community reach out. I hope you'll take the time to consider going that route. But let's talk about creating mitzvahs of lasting value. That is such a deep word, too, that I wish we had more than about 3 minutes in there, but I know that's what we have.
So then I'm going to give you a two-minute story from the Baal Shem Tov. There was a woman in the community who was very mean-spirited, and her words were very cruel and unkind, and the community had lasted through almost a generation of it, but the youngsters were fed up, and they didn't like it, and they didn't like her. So they went to the rabbi and said, oh, great rabbi, could you help us, please? We haven't wanted to bother you, but we just can't deal with it anymore. We just can't deal with this woman's cruelty and unkindness. Her words are just so mean. The rabbi said, sure, send her to me. Tell her I have a job for her. So the woman struts up the village thinking, oh, the rabbi needs me, the rabbi needs me, and in she goes, and the rabbi says, you know, sit down, have a little cup of tea. I have a very important job. I need you. You're a very beautiful, strong woman. She feels even better. He says, I have this old pillow, and I really need to air it out. I have to take it up to the roof. I can't carry it by myself. Would you help me? Let's stop the tea. Wait, go upstairs. So they go upstairs to the roof, and he hands her the pillow, and he says, you know, you just have to open it up because it's just so musty. We have to make it fresh again. She says, okay. So she makes a little slit and opens it up, and he says, now we've got to get all those feathers out. Just shake out all those feathers so we can make them nice and fresh again. She says, Rabbi, really? You want me to do that? Yes. So she shakes out the feathers, and he says, come on, take them all out, shake them all out, just right here, shake them all out. Well, she shakes them all out, but of course, you know, a little go here and a little go there, and a wind picks them up, and he says, oh, good, you see, now they're all fresh again. Let's put them all back in and collect them. You want me to collect these feathers, Rabbi? Yes, I do. Well, okay, Rabbi, they're all over the place. Well, okay, 1, 2, Rabbi, no, Rabbi, it's not possible to collect these feathers. Look, they're all over, and the wind's really taken them all over there as well. I can't possibly collect these feathers. He says, no, you cannot collect these feathers. And these feathers are like the words that you utter to everyone in the village. They are very unkind. And once you have let those words out, your words are like these feathers, and you may never get them back again. Now, see this feather that I give you? I want you to take this home and remember that every one of your words is a feather, and every one of those feathers goes up to God. Is that what you want God to hear from your lips, madam? Is that? Please think about it. Think about kindness. More words of kindness. More kindness in every word.
Rocky, usually we conclude each program with, we ask our guests for a piece of advice to our listeners, maybe formulated very briefly as a summary to what we've been talking about during this hour. But I think that concluding remark about the kind words and the words of kindness, that might serve as one of the best pieces of advice we've heard on 96.1 FM here. Would you agree?
I'm glad that you like it.
I am,
because I think it's something to take to heart, and it just completely keeps us present, and it's an if not now, when. Now is the moment.
Rabbi Bernstein, very quickly, because we're almost pretty much out of time, how can we reach you if people want to have contact with you?
You can reach me at rabbiroki@gmail.com.
Beautiful.
R-O-K-I-E.
Ну что ж, дорогие друзья, только что вы услышали e-mail раввина Рокки Бернстейн, с которой вы можете связаться, если захотите. Мы завершаем нашу беседу. Она была, наверное, немножечко религиозной точки зрения того, что очень часто мы цитировали различные источники, притчи, сказания. Тут была и Тора, тут были и другие истории из Библии, но суть нашей программы в том, что нужно творить добро. Random acts of kindness, как говорят, случайно, может быть, не задумываясь об этом, и нести его в себе, и нести его другим людям. And also, as a conclusion, I guess, thank you very much, Rocky, for being with us today. Thank you, Sid, for these questions, for this conversation, and I just want to wish happy holidays to everybody.
Thank you.
Freedom shining more each night. Wondrous holiday of light, freedom shining more each night. At this time of year, we wish you good cheer as we say, have a happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah.
Festival of light for 8 days and nights, candles are glowing far and near. Wondrous holiday of light, freedom shining more each night. Wondrous holiday of light, freedom shining more each night. At this time of year, we wish you good cheer as we say, have a happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah.
Festival of light for 8 days and nights, candles are glowing far and near. Tell the story of days gone by as the candle flames grow bright. Ancient glory defies the night, turning darkness shining more each night. Wondrous holiday of light, freedom shining more each night. At this time of year, we wish you good cheer as we say, have a happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah.
Festival of lights for 8 days and nights, candles are glowing far and near. Festival of lights for 8 days and nights. Happy Hanukkah to those we hold most dear. Happy Hanukkah year after year. Festival of lights for 8 days.
You're listening to Fairchild Radio Canada, a nationwide multicultural radio station. Log on to www.fairchildradio.com and get to know us.